Good Friday, and the markets were, let me see here, what did corn do today? Oh yeah, the markets are closed. What the heck are we doing here?
From Good Friday afternoon via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll crack the books with Chris Barron from Carson Barron Farms and AgView Solutions. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis Michelson, you left yourself out of the introduction.
I was just going to say, I forgot to mention, I will update you! The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report in the fourth segment. Stick around for that.
That's for right. Sure. That's right. Yeah. Everything's good. All right, here it is, Good Friday. We are headed into Easter weekend. Hard to believe that we're going into Easter weekend, Davis.
Well, it feels like it's coming early this year, isn't it? A little bit earlier in the month?
You know, I know that there's not stopping Easter. I get that. But it doesn't even feel like it's happening.
Yeah, I know.
We're kinda not like getting together. You know, it's so
weird.
We should be shopping for
rolls and little gherkin pickles and things. And, you know, just trying to decide, well, let's see. Now, do I go spiral cut ham? Or, well, now, Ted will be bringing the kids, so I don't know. Maybe we need two.
Yeah.
That's what we should be thinking about right now.
I'm going to go to the convenience store just to get a box of Peeps.
Attaboy. There you go. Yeah. That's the spirit.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
If nothing else, we'll watch them melt.
You know, the marshmallow growers of this country need help, too. Just exactly. As much as everybody else.
Exactly. That is exactly right. Wow, dude. Here we are. Yeah. End of the week. Obviously, trade closed today. We saw kind of some solid gains in soybeans and wheat to wrap up the week yesterday. Corn was slightly higher. Mixed trade in the livestock. And we saw some solid gains in the equities. It was a pretty good week for the Dow. And honestly, it was a pretty good week for the livestock. The volatility hasn't gotten any easier to consume.
Right.
But we had a pretty good week for livestock. So,
A bit of a reversal in the crude oil. There was some uncertainty going into the close on what was going to happen at that meeting yesterday between the OPEC dudes. And it completely fell back. It was.
Oh, it did.
Very interesting to watch. Yep.
Well, yeah, because wasn't crude oil trading higher for most of the day yesterday? And then it ended up about a buck and a half lower?
Yep. That's exactly right. Yep. Sharply higher there for a little while. Looked like it was going to recover and everything was going to be okay for those guys. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, OPEC Plus stinks.
It kind of does.
Trying to figure out what those guys are going to do. Holy smokes, man. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. Not easy. Mm-hmm. Hey, we also had supply and demand report yesterday.
That we did,
We got some higher carryover estimates coming, and despite those higher carryover estimates, we still had plus signs in the grain markets. All right, man, let's go ahead. What do you got for some news today?
Well, from yesterday, the pendulum of the wheat market swung back to the upside. That's despite lackluster export sales of just 259,000 metric tons for old crop delivery and just 117,000 tons for new crop delivery. The old crop sales actually were on the top side of trade expectations, but new crop sales fell short of estimates. Despite the 30 million bushel increase in estimated wheat carry for the 2019-20 marketing year, futures closed at the highs of the week. On Thursday's close, July hard red winter wheat was 13¾ cents higher, 4.99 even. July soft red gained 9 cents to 5.57½. July spring wheat firmed 3½ cents to 5.44 even. Chip.
Yeah, the way that they got that 30 million bushel increase in wheat ending stocks was they took 15 million bushels. They USDA World Ag Outlook Board took 15 million bushels out of the feed and residual category, and then took 15 million bushels off of the export estimate as well.
Mm-hmm. Corn export sales in the weekend at April 2 were outstanding at nearly 2.46 million metric tons. Of that tally, old crop sales of 1.85 million tons were reported, with new crop sales at nearly 609,000 metric tons. Old crop sales easily topped trade expectations, with new crop sales in line with estimates. The S&D report for corn was a rough one. USDA slashed 375 million bushels from estimated corn for ethanol use. After an increase in estimated feed and residual use, corn carryover jumped 200 million bushels from last month. Yesterday, May corn futures were 1¾ cents higher, 331¾. July corn firmed 1¼ to 336¾. These corn closed at 350¾, up a penny and a half. Something feels good about actually closing just a shade above 350 in the D's, Chip. Yeah. Am I wrong? Yeah.
No, it does. It does. And as a matter of fact, D's corn was steady, flat, steady on the week.
Nice.
With that close at 350¾. So got that going for it. You know, we talked yesterday with Seth Meyer from University of Missouri Fabry. He used to... He was the chief of the World Ag Outlook Board at USDA, putting the supply and demand estimates together. And we talked a lot about the feed and residual category for corn. They put like you said, they took 375 million bushels off of the corn for ethanol use. They put 150 million bushels into the feed and residual. And in this case, it's a fair amount of and residual in that 150 million bushels there. They added 20 million bushels to the other food, seed, and industrial use, and the end result is that 200 million bushel increase in carryover. Don't forget that that's the beginning stocks for the 2020-21 marketing year. And boy, we're building it up, and it's going to be tough to get a positive new crop corn balance sheet when we get the May supply and demand report.
Well, soybean export sales in the weekend at April 2 lined up with trade expectations, with old crop sales of more than 523,000 metric tons and new crop sales of just over 353,000 metric tons. Bean carryover jumped 55 million bushels from last month, with a 50 million bushel cut to estimated bean exports. That's the featured change on the demand side of the market. Yeah. On Thursday's close, May bean futures were 9 cents higher, 863.5. July beans gained 9¼ to close at 871. November soybeans closed at 875¾, up 7¾ cents, Chip.
Yeah, they added 20 million to the crush, soybean crush as well. That takes it to a record 2.125. They took 24 million bushels out of the residual number on beans, Davis, all the way down to 5. What that means is that the stocks numbers that we got just last week probably indicated that they underestimated the 2019 bean crop. So this low residual usage number is actually adding to total supplies.
Ooh, all right. Well, beef export sales were down from the previous week and from the four-week average, but were still solid at 15,800 metric tons, Chip. That helped support front-month futures. April live cattle jumped 117.5 to 94 bucks even. August cattle fell $1.45 to 90.75. April feeders slipped 35 cents to 119.52.5. And on the snout side, pork export sales in the weekend at April 2nd were outstanding at nearly 56,000 metric tons. Wow. Chip, that was a 47% jump from last month. Wow. April lean hogs, 32.5 cents lower, 42.80. July fell 210, 54.75.
Yeah, and like I said, on the week, April live cattle up $5.67.5. April feeders up $11.27.5. And April lean hogs up 257.5.
Okay, so overall higher on the week.
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad.
Yeah, we'll take that.
Hey, stay tuned, everybody. We've got a great conversation coming your way. Chris Barron, AgView Solution, Carson Barron Farms. He's got some great perspective coming your way next on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields. AgriTalk is paying tribute to farmers, agronomists, and all of agriculture chasing the dream this agronomy week. Our coverage is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgro, and Delta Pine. Learn more at agronomyweek.com. Let's continue our Agronomy Week celebration with this industry spotlight. Talking now with Marshall Landis. Marshall is a farmer in Southwest Michigan and a DeKalb NCGA Yield Contest winner. Congratulations, Marshall, on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So tell me, Southwest Michigan, what are conditions like this spring?
Conditions are pretty good. We've had low rain amounts, so the soil's prime. You know, even with this last little bit of rain, everything's looking good. Temperatures are pretty good. So everything's looking good for a good start.
All right. So you did well with the 2019 crop. What was the key last year to those high yields?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, we changed the fertilizer program before the year started. I think that had a little bit to do with it. We were working more in the micronutrient side and stuff like that, and just watching the crop and trying to feed it what it needs when it needs it.
Right, right. That sounds like, it's becoming more and more popular to kind of spoon feed those crops out there, Marshall. It sounds like that's what you were doing.
Yep. That's what we do. We get a general program we start with, and depending on the rain, depending on the heat, depending on no sunshine, we adjust from there.
Just like everybody. Yep. How do you use that DeKalb agronomist in helping you reach some of those higher yields?
They do a pretty good plot deal, and we get their open house and their field days and stuff. We get pretty good information from them guys on varieties that they grow in the area, so we look a lot at that to get, you know, ones that work good for what we do.
Very good. Marshall, thank you so much. Good luck to you in 2020. That is Marshall Landis, farmer in Southwest Michigan and a DeKalb NCGA Yield Contest winner. And welcome back to AgriTalk on this Good Friday. Markets are closed. And Davis, you know what we like to do when the markets are closed? Take big picture. Big picture look at things. And I don't know anybody that does a better job of it than Chris Baer and AgView Solutions. Chris, welcome back to AgriTalk. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. Looking at the big picture out in the middle of the field here today.
Excellent. What you doing?
We're doing a little strip tilling. We do have a planter in the field here this week, too, putting beans in. I heard you talking earlier this week to some guys, and I guess we're the lone rangers that are willing to admit that, we've got one whole farm of beans in, so we'll see how that works out.
You know, you've been kind of on the, I won't call it the bleeding edge of it, because it works for you. You've been on the leading edge of it. In your experience, it does work.
Yeah, this is year number 12 for us. It was a big secret for about the first 8 years, and then everybody started planting beans early. But we've always either planted all the beans in front of the corn, or at least been planting beans while we plant corn. Last year, we were done with beans before we started corn, and it always seems to work for us. You know, the key is getting good planting depth with just to do a really good job of planting, kind of pretend like you're planting corn when you're doing them. And usually we try to get a little bit deeper planting depth, and the cold weather, I know we're supposed to be in the 30s, 40s, and maybe even high 20s, it sounds like, but I'm not too concerned. It'll eventually warm up, and we got them planted deep enough. The soil temperature won't really change that much where they're sitting anyway.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, this time of the year over at Carson Baron Farms, there's lots of activity. How is it different this year with what we're dealing with the coronavirus crisis?
Yeah, well, on the farm side of things, and obviously with our seed business, things are a lot different. We've got signs on the doors and try to keep people out of the offices, try to keep everybody good social distance, wiping countertops down and doorknobs and all kinds of stuff all the time. We do have cleaners in the vehicles, you know, antiseptic sprays, that kind of stuff, and really just trying to keep everybody healthy and safe, because you know, we're what, maybe a week away, a couple weeks away in some areas, but it's going to get busy, and we can't really afford to have anybody down, so we got to take care of each other and make sure we keep everybody healthy to the best of our ability. That's for sure.
Yeah, and with your seed business, boy, you've got to be careful there. And it, a lot of it probably has to do with communication. And you can't just show up at a guy's place to drop off seed. Now, you've got to be in communication with them.
Yeah, and that's a two-way street, too. I think as
sure.
producers, we want to make sure we're calling suppliers and in advance before we show up, whether it's picking up anhydrous tank, fertilizer, seed, whatever it is. I think we'd really want to be doing some communication on the phone and try to not be in personal contact. I know when Jason and the guys have been delivering seed, a lot of times they show up to an empty shed and, yeah. you know, it's tough. You know, people like to talk and we want to shake hands yeah. and stuff, but I think it's just that time where we're going to have to be really careful here the next couple of weeks in our yep. area for sure.
Yep, no doubt, no doubt. Now, when you sent over, I'm not going to lay, I can't take credit for this one, for this question. This is all on Chris. And it's, I think it's, it is so important. The kids are at home. They're not in school. They want to be involved. It makes for some great family time. But boy, there's some risks there too, isn't there, Chris?
There definitely is. And in fact, we just did yesterday our farm operation pre-spring planting meeting, and we spent a lot of time always on safety. But one of the key things on safety this year is with all the kids that are around, you know, home from school at ages, you know, from kindergarten through 12th grade, and you know, and some college kids, but. I noticed even in our own operations the last couple of days, we've been asking some of the, you know, high school kids to do things that probably we wouldn't normally have them doing. And we got to thinking about this, you know, we really going to have to sit down and have good conversations with the kids that are helping us on the farm and doing things, you know, around. And it's also with the little kids, just making sure that you sit down and explain safety to them. And, you know, we've had some clients that have had, situations where, you know, employees have had to bring kids to work with them because they don't have any place else to go with the kids. And so I think just really good communication on that safety side. And then, by the way, on the AgView pitch, we'll be doing a podcast on farm safety for just kids. And we'll also have a video that Shay, my son and partner, is putting together. And we can get that to you, too, if anybody wants to watch that or have their kids watch it.
Yes.
Just to kind of get some extra safety pointers out there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I saw it, I kind of, you know, it was a facepalm moment when I saw that you wanted to talk about this, Chris, because it's, I don't want to downplay it at all because it's so obvious that this is something that we need to be talking about. And until right now, we haven't talked about it. And it don't assume that college, your son or your daughter from college is home from college. They've been away for 2-3 years. Don't assume that they don't need a reminder on how things work. Talk to them.
I mean,
communicate with them.
Exactly. I mean, like you said, the college kids, our son that's at Iowa, he was in the Marines, had his CDL, got out of the Marines. He's in college. He came back. The first thing we do is throw him in a semi and he's hauling corn to Cedar Rapids, you know. So, you know, like yeah. I said, we're asking these kids to do things and we all are, you know, and so we got to sit down, make sure we talk through safety. We talk through all the things. And again, I still think that the big deal is with the little ones too. You know, we think that they aren't paying attention and they want to be where we're at. They want to be in the tractors. They want to be with, you know, mom or dad or uncle or whoever. But we really got to make sure we stress that safety to the kids and also to the parents. We all just need to have it on the front of our mind all the time.
Yep. Yep. Real quick, when we come back in the next segment, Chris, we're going to talk more about the business side of things, but give me 30 seconds on how this has changed your Easter celebration.
Well, last year on Easter, it was the nicest weather we had the entire planting season, and so I guess we're going to FaceTime and have Easter. Everybody's going to eat a little food and look at each other on a screen and be thankful that everybody's healthy. And I think it's, you know, we're fortunate in agriculture. We can go out and still work and get our things right. done. We just got to keep everybody healthy.
Keep everybody healthy. Thank you so much for that message, Chris. That's good stuff. Hey, stick around. Come back. We've got more with Chris Barron next on AgriTalk.
Let the proven performance of Prosaro fungicide maximize your grain quality, yield, and profit this season.
It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, but instead of first thing today, we're going right to the top of the front page of this week's Pro Farmer newsletter. Alexander Pope's famous phrase, "Hope springs eternal," is especially relevant this year. As we face the uncertainty and changes brought on by the COVID-19 situation, we are reminded that in our darkest hours, we know brighter days lie ahead. Easter is the season of new life and new beginning as we celebrate Christ's resurrection. Spring is also a time for new life and new beginnings for farmers and ranchers. We are reminded of this through the joys of experiencing our spring calf crop or a new litter of pigs that will be raised to provide meat for others. We are reminded of this as we work our soils and put seeds in the ground so that we can feed the world. We hope you carry the joy of Easter through your daily lives. Better times are ahead. Hope springs eternal.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is paying tribute to farmers, agronomists, and all of agriculture chasing the dream this agronomy week. Our coverage is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgrow, and Delta Pine. Learn more at agronomyweek.com. Let's continue our Agronomy Week celebration with this industry spotlight. Talking now with Lance Tarchione. He is a DeKalb Asgrow agronomist in Illinois. Well, here we are, early April. I mean, if guys can get rolling in early April in your part of the world, they're going to do it, aren't they?
Yeah, especially on the heels of last year when we really went through the entire season with no good planting conditions. We've been blessed with some nice early windows this year to get anhydrous on, get tillage done, you know, do some early planting if that's your preference. Been a nice spring so far.
Good. Everybody wants to get their crop off to a good start, Lance. What do guys in your area need to be thinking about to make that happen?
We've talked a lot about maybe being patient with corn planting and being a little more aggressive with early planted soybeans. Feel that the soybeans as a crop can tolerate some early season stress, probably better than corn and a lot better than a lot of people give them credit for. So the research has been very consistent.
What's your idea during Agronomy Week of chasing the dream?
Well, you know, I think every year we're kind of chasing the dream. We're trying to produce the best crop we've ever produced. I mean, growers' goal every year is to do better on their farm than they've ever done in the past. And that's a challenge because Mother Nature has a lot to say with the kind of year that we have. And so we're just trying to partner with the environment as best we can, and you know, for me personally as an agronomist, I grew up a farm kid on a small farm that was really struggling through the farm crisis of the 80s, and there really wasn't a place for me there when I was growing up. So I went into agronomy because that was the closest I could do to, you know, chasing my dream to be a farmer.
Cool.
And that's what I love about agronomy and like working with farmers.
Very cool, Lance. Thank you so much. That is Lance Tarchione. He is the DeKalb Asgrow agronomist there in West Central Illinois. All right, let's get back to the conversation with Chris Barron from AgView Solutions, Carson Barron Farms. Chris, we talked a lot about safety and dealing with the coronavirus crisis in the last segment. Let's get over and start talking about some of the decision making that is happening out there right now. And if you go back to the end of February, first part of March, Chris, everybody must have been all geared up, ready to go on corn, because the prospective plantings report at 97 million acres on corn kind of blew me away.
Yeah, that is a big number. I still think on that number there's going to be some prevent plant that's going to be in that to the north from a lot of the clients we work with in North Dakota and southeast South Dakota, and there's some pockets, and maybe even in Michigan, a few areas. But it's a huge number. I think guys are starting to scratch their head a little bit between corn and soybeans, no doubt.
Okay, so as they scratch their head over that and consider making some acreage switches, take us through the decision-making on that, Chris.
Well, really, I what we look at are really four key considerations. You know, first of all, it's the yield potential of a given area. You know, some areas just do better with corn, some areas just do better with soybeans. And sure. So I think that's consideration number one. The next one is basis and local demand that we look at as part of that formula. So, you know, what's basis look like? What kind of price opportunities do you have? What do you already have sold? What do you not have sold? And then the third one is agronomics. Always enters into the equation, which has something to do usually with the next year. So it's, you know, it's that look ahead and maybe even, you know, we'll even do some calculations on that next year of what's that rotation look like and how does that impact the profitability in the upcoming year, comparing the two and keeping an apples to apples comparison. And then that fourth layer that we look at is the insurance level of coverage. And that has a little bit to do with taking into account the first three things, but then saying, okay, you know, am I insured at $750 an acre on corn and only, you know, $450 on soybeans? And what's my yield potential and what's that risk component look like? And that has a lot to do with it as well. So those are really the kind of the four things when we start comparing, you know, corn versus soybeans.
Right. Okay. Couple of things to follow up on there, Chris. Another one that needs to go in there is the safety net, the farm program safety net potential payments, right?
Well, yeah, that's true, because, you know, if you look at corn, one thing that scares me sometimes, I hear occasionally a comment along the lines, well, I'm going to be able to put soybeans in and spend less money. It's not about how much money we spend. It's about, you know, how much we can make, or, you know, unfortunately right now it's, you know, which one's going to lose you the least amount of money is what we're seeing right now. In fact, you know, we're seeing most of our clients are somewhere between $35 and $40, maybe $50 underwater on corn and about $20 to $25 underwater on soybeans. So, so we really got to take those things into account and say, you know, which one is the better of the two. And then, like you say, you know, what program opportunities are there? And, you know, I know they're not talking an MFP, but probably something along the lines called something different.
Yep.
But hopefully that ties into, you know, regardless of what you plant, I think what, you know, like what Jim Wischmeyer's been saying and some of them, you know, it sounds like they're not really trying to tie it to a crop. So I think, you know, that's probably something that's going to lay over onto either crop.
Right, right. Okay. You mentioned basis consideration in your acreage decision or your crop mix decision. When you talk about that with clients, how many of them, is that a fresh idea to a lot of them?
Oh, it's getting more understood, you know. Okay. Obviously with what happened last year, you know, the basis is still decent yet in the east and up in, you know, in some areas where the crop was pretty short. But then, you know, there's also areas that are heavy ethanol plants. And so, you know, basis has obviously really been impacted in those areas pretty significantly. So I think in an area where a grower's heavy, you know, and that basis consideration is, you know, how much of your grain has to go to ethanol, you know, versus what other options do you have either via livestock or other options. And then so if those options are limited more so toward the ethanol, then maybe the bean consideration has a little bit more weighted average, you know, weighted benefit potentially. So all four of those key things, though, really are things that we try to look at.
Yeah, that's interesting. And when you look at the way that the ethanol situation has changed since that survey was done by NASS for the prospective plantings report, that has got to be the number one thing that is going to chase some acres away from corn and over to soybeans or some other crop, right?
Right. You know, there's an emotional component to that too, and I just really stress people, please sit down and do your own numbers, because you know you can be in an area that, like we were just talking about, where the ethanol is kind of the key thing, but you also may have some agronomic reasons and some other considerations on yield or whatever it may be that still gives you an advantage heavier to the corn or maybe the soybeans, you know. So it's just amazing to me how different it is. I can be in the same county with two different farmers, and one probably should be planting more corn and the next one probably should be planting more soybeans. And so there's no one size fits everything either, and so that's why it's so critical to run through those numbers specific to your own situation.
Chris, in the farmers that you work with, how much real flexibility do they have to change up their acreage mix at this time of the year?
Well, most of them have a lot more than they're willing to use, partially just because of inconvenience to them, you know, more corn to handle, or with the soybean side of things, they've already got seed in, they've got the seed planting done. But, you know, it's amazing when you sit down and you run the numbers, and if all of a sudden you see an additional, you know, $50 an acre on one crop versus another in terms of value cumulatively to those four considerations, all of a sudden that can kind of change your attitude a little bit. You know, it takes a little bit of the emotion out of it when you can put the numbers in it and that type of thing. The other thing, one other quick thing I'd like to comment on, if it's all right, too, is just we're looking at insurance at 85% coverage with the majority of our clients. Yep. And corn, you know, one thing to be thinking about, you know, corn at 330 at 85% coverage, if you yield your APH, that's where the revenue portion of that payment is going to start, too. So there is some insurance there, and that number for soybeans is about 780. So you want to kind of look at that and say, okay, well, you know, if this market does really get hammered on corn, for example, let's say, you know, during that price discovery on that deep corn during the month of October, you know, there's likely, you know, if this thing stays under pressure, there could be some pretty big insurance indemnity payments again this year.
Crazy. Here we are on Good Friday. And we got to remember that price was set in at the end of February. That price was set, and we're already talking about triggering the revenue coverage payments. Chris, happy Easter to you, my friend. Take care, and we'll talk with you again real soon.
Hey, thanks, Chip. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. That is Chris Barron, AgView Solutions. We're going to be back, Davis and I, to wrap up this Good Friday edition of AgriTalk next.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. That guy right there, that handsome newsman right there is Davis Michaels.
Yeah. Heck yeah, here I am.
Yeah,
dude, it's so good to have Chris on.
Yeah, oh yes, absolutely. You know, when the markets are closed and we get a chance to have that kind of a big picture discussion with somebody, I love getting Chris in here. But he surprised me when he went to the safety angle, the farm safety angle. That was so spot on to do that and talk about, okay, listen, the kids are home from school. Listen, even though Jimmy used to help on the farm, he went off to college. He's been gone for 3 years and he's back.
Right.
You know, at this time of the year. Yeah. Yep. Let's not forget that maybe a reminder is needed. I thought, man, good work, Chris. Good work on that.
Absolutely.
Solid reminder. And then, of course, the conversation about the acreage mix for 2020. When he said, listen, there's probably more flexibility in your acreage mix than what you think there might be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is so good. You've got to take another look. Is it an inconvenience to change things up at this time of the year? Sure, it might be. Doesn't mean that it's not worth considering. Mm-hmm. Even if you think you're locked in stone, take another look at it. Take another look at it and make sure that you're making the right decisions there.
Convenience ain't always cheap, Chip.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right. Right. All right, man, we got to get to it. Let's get it. The Friday Farm Fuel and Fertilizer Report. Give me fire, give me that which
I desire. Yeah. The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report is a service of Pro Farmers Inputs Monitor. For weekly updated fuels and fertilizer prices from across the Midwest and in your crop district, visit profarmer.com. And now, Chip!
Here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail.
The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report. I want to clarify something before I talk anymore.
Okay.
I'm not here to criticize anyone else's work. Okay.
Okay.
Yep. We're all sort of looking at our own matrices and we've got our own analyses going on here, and that's great. We need a rich tapestry of ideas.
I did something wrong.
You know what you did. There were some articles coming out this week talking about fertilizer prices at a 10-year low.
Yeah.
While fertilizer prices, yes, according to my 12-state survey, are lower than last year. You know, we've got anhydrous off about $100. We've got phosphates down 20-some-odd percent on the year. I'm not quite willing to call it a 10-year low. Right. You know, number one, just because my numbers are not that low. But number two, we've also had the dip in the expected new crop revenue.
Right.
Okay, fine. You know, maybe fertilizer is dirt cheap and that feels good. That feels great. You know, sticker shock isn't maybe quite as bad, but if you're trying to market in an environment like this and you're trying to figure out, well, geez, how do I get this squared away in the books? You know, 350 corn, that's tough. That pulls us down below $600 per acre. You know, on a trend line yield anyway. Others will probably do a little better than that. But it's important to keep in mind, sure, okay, fertilizer prices may be low. Let's not get complacent with that, though. Let's remember, we still got to try and make a profit off of this. We still got to try and move forward here now. The other thing I would talk about is diesel. We're up 2 cents per gallon on diesel this week. You might recall we talked about a comment that BJ Split had made about the upside down nature of gasoline and heating oil futures. And that setup remains in place here. But the whole idea behind that was, hey, man, you know, and especially now with tractors starting to roll, we got tractors rolling all over the place here in my backyard.
Yep.
Diesel demand is solid. It will not reflect the demand destruction that we've seen in gasoline. And that goes for highway diesel, that goes for farm diesel. And national distillate stocks, we haven't talked about this, Chip, according to EIA, are outside of the bottom end of the five-year average range. That means that they're as low as they've been in 5 years.
Right.
On your national distillate stocks.
Exactly.
There's definitely the potential for some pain there if we're not paying attention. Do I think we overextend at this point? No. But be advised, we are up 2 cents per gallon this week to a regional average of 220. That compares to $2.46 this same week last year in history. Let me run these down quick. NH3 was up $1.83 on the week to $5.10.91. Compare that to last year, right around $600. DAP is down $7.54 this week to a regional average of $4.20.14. MAP is up about $6.50 to $4.20. DAP and MAP are priced in the real numbers, very closely together, both of them at 420 and change, which is an interesting setup as well. Usually we see MAP at about a $15 premium, so I would expect strength in MAP to maybe continue, and this week looks like they're trying to sort that out. Vitamin K potash up $1.27 to $3.60.35. 28% is down 26 cents, 32% off 24 cents on the week. Urea is up $1.58, $3.72.20 there. Like I said, your farm diesel is up 2 cents to $2.20. LP is unchanged at $1.46. All told, our nutrient composite index firmed 0.57 points on the week to 536.67, well below a year ago, well below our moving averages, the 5-year and the 3-year. We're in good shape here, but just remember, you know, cheap fertilizer doesn't mean easy profit. You still got to make the paperwork work out. You got to push that pencil. Get to profarmer.com for more. Chip.
Excellent work. Okay, taking a look at what is expected from the weather here over the next week or week ahead. Those below normal temperatures, Davis, that are coming our way. I mean, we got up to 70 degrees at one point earlier this week.
It was gorgeous. I was bare-chested in the yard without shame.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
And it felt like spring had sprung. Well, then yesterday there were some snowflakes flying around in northern Iowa. It's just kind of a strange situation. But the week ahead, we've got some cold temperatures coming. It's going to put the corn planting on delay here just a little bit. Brother, happy Easter to you, man.
Happy Easter to you, my man.
Yeah, and happy Easter to everybody out there. You got to come back on Monday morning, Machinery Pete, right here on AgriTalk.
The world is frozen, silenced by quarantines, isolated by distance. But while work for you may have changed, out here, we're still going strong. The crops will get planted, the livestock will be fed, and your food will continue to be grown, just like it's been for generations. American agriculture farms on today and tomorrow for our family and yours.